Welcome to IT Live, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook, got Justin Wells. Justin, it's like old times are answering questions. You and me getting to talk ball, always fun. Make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. And of course, if you have not done so yet, head to InsideTexas.com. $1 gets you access all the way up until when toe meets leather in Columbus, Ohio at 11 Central, noon Eastern, whether that's I don't know if that's going to be Shipley or Stone kicking off, or whether, you know, Texas will win the toss and defer and, you know, or receive. Who knows what's going to happen. Whenever toe meets leather on Fox with Gus and Joel calling it and Jenny Taff and everybody there, Lee Corso's last game day, big noon Saturday, the game of the week, hopefully number one versus number two. If you sign up for Inside Texas today, we got a link in the description right now. $1 will get you all the premium access. That's recruiting. We got a lot of recruiting to talk about today. That's team info. That's Big 12 Media Days. What am I talking about? That's SEC Media Days coverage, everything. Sign up, $1, August 30th. And, you know, if you want to be the most informed fan, you want to know everything about Texas football heading into the 2025 season, go buy Paul Wadlington's Longhorn Football Prospectus. He knows I save this for plane rides. I got a plane ride out to SEC Media Days this weekend. So guess what I'm going to read? I'm going to read Thinking Texas Football. You should too. Head to the link in our description. Go and find it. It is basically, if you want to know everything there is to know about Texas football, Texas football's opponents, the landscape of college football as a whole, and also the 2025 recruiting class that is on campus now. Eric Nalin, our guy, wrote a big piece on that. Go buy it. You see the cover athlete, Arch Manning. Arch Manning there. The other side has our guy, Michael Taff, and our main man, Will Gallagher, created all the great pictures, took all the great pictures here for this preview. If you're thinking that Phil Steele, if you're thinking that Lindy's, if you're thinking that Athlon has the best insight, they don't. Paul Wadlington has it. And of course, Inside Texas has it all the way up until August 30th. And yeah, Ryan Nelson, Big 12 Media Days, thinking of Cody Campbell. Hey, that's been the big topic. It's funny to see how a natural gas pipeline executive and a former Mike Leach offensive lineman and a Texas Tech chancellor has taken a big grip on college athletics. We'll talk a little bit about that. I paid a little bit of attention to it just to see what your mark said. Not a whole lot there if you're a Texas fan. So just wait for this upcoming weekend. But Justin, it is the thick of recruiting season. We'll try to answer as many questions as possible that you throw into the chat. So please go in there. Of course, Ian Boyd, not here today. He did just post an article about how Texas can make the most of athletic tight ends in 2025. That's where you need to go to, you know, learn about Jack Hendrys, learn about Jordan Washington, all those guys. So make sure you check that out. We may talk about that at the end if we have a little bit of time for it, but we got to talk a little bit about some of the recruiting decisions that we're waiting on. Before we get to that, though, Chris Bennett brings this up. Michael Taff is at the MLK P. Terry's today, helping with Central Texas relief efforts.
I think he's going to be there around noon.
I think it's
12 or 12:30.
I may jump off, and whenever that's done, I may go head over there to see that, get myself a P. Terry's burger.
He's going to be signing autographs, taking pictures, all that fun stuff. Michael Taff is always the one to go above and beyond when it comes to the Texas football program.
Exactly. If you go to InsideTexas.com right now, we have links available for how to help everybody affected in Central Texas, Kerr County. Great, great way to help everybody affected by the flood. I was on radio this morning. It's more than just the camp stuff. And that's obviously extremely tragic. But there are people who live there. There are people who are visiting there. There's so much more. It's Texans. It's Americans. It's your fellow human. So if you want to go help out, that is the place to go. Once again, get your questions in the chat. And Justin, we do have a decision that we need to track today that belongs to Jamarian Carlton, the four-star edge out of Temple, Texas. And this one has become interesting of late. We've talked about it a lot. Baylor, Texas Tech, pulling some emotional heartstrings, pulling a variety of heartstrings. This is one that's going to come down to the wire. We'll be tracking this. I think it's this afternoon when Carlton announces his decision. And it's, you know, one of those modern recruitments, I guess, is the best way of putting what we're talking about when it comes to Jamarian Carlton.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, modern, I guess that works. This is a funny recruitment because everybody, is, including us, has essentially said if we had to go one way, I even mentioned it on the show yesterday, I think it would be Baylor. And every pundit at On3 Rivals/Rivals has predicted Baylor. Yet every RPM says Texas. So if that's modern era in recruiting, welcome to the jungle. You know, it's one of those things where he wants to stay close to home, like really close to home. So it's going to be Texas or Baylor, I feel like. Texas Tech tried to money whip him. And I think at first he was, you know, he liked that. But then after talking to his mom long enough, he decided he needed to go with the two schools that he'd probably built the best relationships with. And that's Texas and Baylor. Texas with Lyle and Clark. He's been tremendous in this recruitment, especially since he arrived in January. And then Baylor. Baylor's been on him the longest. And look at Baylor's class. Baylor has a good class. They have some really good prospects in this cycle, namely London Smith. I'm a huge fan of that kid out of Waco University. And so it's funny because we know he wants to stay close to home. It's just how close. And I think even this morning, I think him and his mother and that family circle are debating how close, because you can be 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or you could be an hour and 10 minutes. Like it's crazy, but it really is coming down to that. It's going to come down to that opportunity. He probably sees the field earlier in Waco at Baylor than he would at Texas, but he would probably get developed a lot better at Texas just based off of history and NFL draft and things of that sort. I think the kid is genuinely, here's the thing. I can see him going to either one. And with a lot of these recruitments, I can't see that. There are certain schools you just can't see a kid going to once you get to know him and you kind of fill out the dynamics of it. With him, I think he would be happy at either place. And that's what makes this thing kind of tight. Like, I think he envisions himself at both places, Texas and at Baylor. And so it's essentially, do you want to run with the dogs in the Big 12 at Baylor? Or do you want to run with the dogs in the SEC at Texas? You want to be a little closer to home, or do you want to be a little further away? I'm sure he's going to come up with a splendid answer, and we're going to have it covered top to bottom.
This is a recruitment that Texas has been involved in for about 13 months now. Carlton camped at Texas. I can't remember if it was May 31st or June 1st this time last year, received an offer, and Texas looked like they did everything right on a player who's, you see his rankings on the screen. Everybody's got him top 100. Most have him top 50. Who's been in this area for a long time. And I know that you and I have talked about this kind of off camera and you know, what his position. This guy looks like a perfect buck. Maybe he grows into Jack, you know, when he's listed at 230 pounds or so. That lends you to believe that maybe he can get to 260 or something like that. But this is someone who is a great fit for Buck, especially when you look at the idea that you have Richard Wesley over on the other side. I do like that you mentioned, like, at this point, there are times when NIL becomes the overwhelming factor. Yes. We saw that about this time last week. But there are times when NIL becomes the box to check.
Exactly.
And it's kind of looking like right now, it's the box to check. We know Texas can do it. We know Baylor can do it. You know, LSU can do it. And as you've mentioned, it's coming down to relationships. And Alan Clark has done a fantastic job of putting Texas in position to, if they haven't already done that already, checking that relationship and comfort box from a close-to-home school.
Yeah, and I want to give credit to Charlie Williams. He has been all over this one. He made a great point about that. He said, look, you know, down deep, Jamarian's looking for that father figure. And Alan Clark has been that kind of guy for him. And so I think that is one of the ways that Texas has really weaved themselves into this and given themselves a great chance. Again, Baylor was up on them early and often. And a lot of times, you know, with a kid that's not a NIL type kid, that's what resonates. It's actual relationships. Those things still do exist. Believe it or not, in this era, yeah, they're going to be NIL recruitments, but then they're going to be basic old school recruitments as well, where you recruit the family, you get close, you show them how he fits, you give him the vision, and you let him go. This one, Charlie made a point, if he puts on 30 pounds, 30 pounds in the next year and a half, he's going to fill out to be a pretty good jack at the college level. Will he lose any of that athleticism? That's what I'm wondering about. He's tremendous on the basketball court. He's got incredible metabolism, matter of fact. So I think it would be a little difficult to get him on there, to get him up to there. But I don't see a Taquan Graham type ascension. I don't think he's going to get that big and then move to an interior defensive lineman. That's not going to happen. This kid's going to be chasing down quarterbacks from the edge at the college level. And again, I want to tip my cap to Charlie. I think he has been tremendous in this recruitment. This has been a team effort one, simply because in the new era, like you got to have so many bases covered now. It's more than just the parent, the player, and the coach. You've got an agent. You've got a street agent. You got a 7-on-7 coach. You got an uncle. You got a lot of opportunistic people today that these kids really need to kind of keep their head on a swivel. And I think Jamarian has surrounded himself with a great circle. And I think it's going to be fun. Blake Bryant made a good point. With the way things have been going lately, he's kind of going to chalk it up to a loss. And I completely get that. Look, we cover it. And so and when fans get a little fatigue from it, just understand we get that. But what you got to remember is that fatigue turns in November and early December. And instead of waiting for Santa Claus, people are waiting for flips. They're waiting for finishes. And that's when Sark really comes down the chimney and gives you some excitement about Texas football. He does wait. He is patient. And man, in this day and age, I find that enlightening, because everyone is reactionary when it comes to a lot of this stuff. But Texas has maintained what they'll pay, their structure. There's an infrastructure there. There's an ecosystem there that is very refined. And honestly, I think Texas fans should be thrilled that Sark's the guy doing this, because he's got some NFL, ties, and he understands it's, the switching from a spring game to an OTA type deal. Like that's how Sark is doing this. And so you got to trust the process there. But yeah, it's July. What is it? July 10th. And we're worried about an edge about an hour down the road, but it's going to be fun when it pops up.
And I think something we'll get to, we'll go over some of the things I wrote about earlier this week about NIL. There are some big dates to track. Whenever the first challenge is to some of the NIL stuff, yeah, we're going to learn a lot about that. August 1st is a day that, according to the settlement, these NIL offers can become closer to official than they are now.
Yeah.
You can't sign any of these agreements on NIL or on revenue sharing technically until, signing day. I try to lay it out, go to Inside Texas. It's still up on pinned on our message board. It's the green money picture, basically, if you find it on our site, that talks a lot about what the current NIL landscape is. And it puts everything in its categories. You've got the direct from the school, direct from, the UT athletic department, revenue sharing. Then you got everything else, the other part of NIL, corporate, collective, all that. And everybody kind of knows what's going on with revenue sharing. Most football programs, SEC football programs, they have or are going to have around $14 million to dedicate to their football roster. That's not enough to build a championship roster. You need more than that. Where does it come from? Away from the school, non-institutional NIL, that's what it's called. But there's still a lot up in the air about how much non-institutional NIL you can give, fair market value, all that stuff. There are so many different questions. And some people aren't waiting for answers, and some people are. That's not a factor in literally every single recruitment, but it's a factor in a lot of recruitments, and we'll dive into that a little bit later. Of course, get your questions here.
I like Ryan and Trill going back and forth. That needs to be addressed.
We'll get that in just a second. Before we do that, got to show some love to our sponsor, and that is Academy Sports and Outdoors, because, Justin, guess what? School starting is right around the corner.
All right. Who's ready?
I'm open.
Let's
we go. Place to go, Academy Sports and Outdoors. You can get basically anything you're looking for. Backpacks. I think they got a lot of school supplies, and if you want to get some
a lot of school supplies, a lot of fishing stuff, a lot of guns, a lot of shoes.
Yeah,
they got a lot of shoes, a lot of golf stuff. They've got. It seems like they have a crazy amount of golf stuff. Academy has it all.
They have Crocs too, which that appeals.
I am so anti that, and my son loves those damn things.
Yes, AJ, that's my guy. We'll go real quick. Justin's your crystal ball RPM on Baylor. Nobody's changed yet.
No, it's not. I'm going to keep it on Texas right now. It's a gut feeling. One of those things. I'm not going to pretend like I know anything more than anybody else. It's a gut feeling. But just talking to his family and talking to those close to him yesterday, I'm going to keep it on Texas. It's still trend. In my opinion, I think it's still trending that way. We're just hesitant to hedge. I mean, we want to hedge just because, you know, things can change quickly. We've learned that, and then so, but no, I'm not changing that.
Nobody else has, like we said, Baylor and Texas are seem to be the final two. Temple's got a lot of influence from both sides. Remember, Chad President is the head coach at Temple right now. Temple is a program that knows what big time recruitments look like, dating back a decade. That's with Texas. That's with Baylor kids. That's with kids who go all over the country, LSU, TCU, A&M. So they know what it looks like over at Temple. Definitely a well-run program. Ryan, we're going to get to another question of yours before we keep going into another decision that we're tracking over the next couple of days. Do you think this new college football, where you have more playoff spots and all coaches can play for top players, will keep guys like Dave Aranda at jobs longer with less hot seat talk? I think that there are always going to be programs, and I think Texas is up there. I think Ohio State is up there. Bama, Georgia, Notre Dame, maybe even USC, even though they haven't been there, that making the playoff 12 or 16 teams isn't enough. But, and maybe Ryan, like the name you should have put in this question isn't Dave Aranda. But maybe it's Joey McGuire.
Oh, yeah.
Because with – and I know that Texas Tech is a giant topic right now. But there are 12 teams that make the playoff. The Big 12 champion automatically makes it. The second-place team in the Big 12 could conceivably make it. We know how maybe not realistic that is. Could it keep people in jobs longer? Yeah. But I also think at the same time, if you're at a power program and you're not contending for a 12-team playoff spot, you know, where 10-2 and we haven't seen this yet, even 9-3 can get you in and you don't get that, maybe not Joey McGuire, maybe Brian Kelly, who I still think is going to have a good year this year, this may be the name to input into this question.
Yeah, it's – I honestly – I think I see where Ryan's going with it, but – I don't see any – honestly, when you involve more money,
right,
the expectations increase. They don't decrease. That seat's not less hot. That seat's going to get more hot because you have to understand where all this money's coming from. 99% of these boosters and everything don't – they're not – there's no return on investment.
Right.
None. Nobody's getting any return on any investment. That's why we've always questioned the sustainability of this model this complete model.
It is solely emotional return.
100%. And you know what emotional does at the bank? Nothing.
It lights money on fire.
That's all it does. And so I like where Ryan's going with this, but I think it's you got to remember, and I've learned this in life just by following professional sports. The more money that gets involved, the more the expectations increase. The hotter the seat gets. You know, look at Oklahoma right now. Brent Venables is on a pretty warm seat. Would it be as warm if he'd had so much trouble getting players in the last couple of years? I don't know. But now they're spending. They're spending what they can. So that's going to increase. The expectations get a lot higher. So I don't see guys at jobs longer. Honestly, I see guys – each year we see more and more guys leaving the college game and going to the NFL if an opportunity popped up because of that pressure cooker of now it's kind of a pro system. And now you kind of have to think like a pro team. in a sense. So I don't think the job gets any less. No, actually, I think the jobs get tougher. I think coaches, if they don't win early and often, are on it immediately. The ones that do win early and often probably use that to go to the next highest job. And so it's going to be similar to what we've always seen. The seats are always going to be hot. And the more money that these kids are getting and that the schools are fishing out, look, it's only going to get warmer.
The thing is, a lot of places that may have thrown tens of millions of dollars into buyouts for coaches are now saying, well, why don't we just pay the players and see if this coach that we believed in 2 years ago can get it done.
The Billy Napier Florida model.
Yeah. And then, you know, because
if Billy doesn't win 7 or 8 games this year, I don't think he makes it.
Right. Because your proposition is, well, you're paying the same amount of money for the roster every time. So why don't you keep paying that same amount of money for the roster and let the buyout go down until it's just not sustainable? You know,
nobody's patient enough because, you know, boosters are impatient by nature. But now that they're forking over so much money, you don't think they're more intense about it? They're more demanding about it now? You've given them more of a say. Texas Tech brought their number one booster to a media days. That's never happened. And you can sell the whole, I'm trying to save college sports. No, you're trying to save Texas Tech and trying to make them relevant at some point in life. And so it's so twisted. I'm telling you, in any sport, not just college football, but anything else, the more money that gets involved, the more scrutiny, the more just hyper reactionary you're going to get with people. And with boosters getting no return on any investment of any sort with any of these programs, buddy, that seat is going to be cooking if you're not winning in 2 years. It is going to beat coaches down. There's a reason we see some hop into the NFL. Matter of fact, we've seen a couple hop backwards back into high school.
Yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic right now. We'll keep going in just a second.
I want you to hit this thing with Trio talking about Sark doesn't build relationships or take recruiting serious. He is very misled, and it's kind of trickled through this thing. Whenever we can get to it, it's a recruiting thing with him and Ryan.
Well, I think we found a good player to talk about that with. With a decision we're tracking. Should be coming tomorrow. Samari Matthews out of North Carolina, Huff High School. H-O-U-G-H is Huff. Top 100 recruit by basically every standard. Never got that interested in Bill Belichick's program. And this is one where relationships via Mark Orfe have Texas looking really good about 24 hours out.
You remember what he told us about Bill Belichick in April? Because we asked him, you're like, hey, Bill Belichick's the coach in your state now. Like, hey, that's what's going on there? And he's like, hey, I think Bill Belichick's a great coach, but he's not going to build any sort of relationship with me. I don't think he wants to do anything with that. He just wants to coach football. That was so telling to me. And maybe Bill Belichick isn't cut out for the college game because he's going to have to – change his stripes a little bit, I would think, because, you know, if he doesn't have Tom Brady, he's an all-time losing coach. And so he's going to have to adapt to this. And maybe his girlfriend is the one that does a lot of the play calling. I don't know. The way that she's involved, that thing is so twisted right now. And Mac Brown is just giggling every morning when he wakes up and eats one of his Sally's cookies because he knows that UNC could be a dumpster fire in 3 months. It's hard to tell. But, dude, Samari Matthews, listen, South Carolina was the team that built the best relationship up until Texas did. Shane Beamer and those guys, they were up on him early and often. They did a great job. But the second Orfe called him and offered him a scholarship, he set the official visit on that same phone call. That's rare. That does not happen. Samari was so intrigued by that. And it's only natural. Samari saw not only the success Texas has had on the field, he saw the success defense has had, how incredible it could have been probably the best defense in college football last year. Then he saw the corner over there, Jadae Barron, grabbing another Thorpe Award. So it's only natural. Then he gets on campus and he just falls in love with the players and the facilities and just the environment that Sark has kind of built around there. For anybody that thinks Sark doesn't build relationships or doesn't take recruiting serious, you haven't tried to cover a spring scrimmage every weekend for four consecutive weekends. They bring them in. They work early. They work hard. And they are the last to leave the building when it's 7, 8 o'clock in the afternoon or at night. Like, they take recruiting incredibly serious. You don't sign number one classes if you don't take recruiting serious. You don't sign top three, top five classes. Sark is great at that. He just doesn't push early because that's not his style. And I think we've really got to trust in what he does. With Samari Matthews, this is a perfect example. He's going to get a good NIL deal. He's going to get an opportunity to come in and play early. They're going to put him on that island early and often. Him opposite Haywood Howard Jr. looks fantastic in my eyes. You throw in a dose of Cade Phillips, and I really like what the young corners can look like. And so right now, I think Texas is in the pole position with Samari. Still another day to go, but it looks like you at the South Carolina media has kind
Gamecock
of
– our buddies, Gamecock Central.
Gamecock Central has kind of already – you know, said, hey, submitted, say, hey, we think he's going to Texas too. This is a pick that we've had for a while that we felt really good about. And again, you said it early, Joe, this isn't an NIL recruitment. With the NIL recruitment, you got to be on your toes constantly. You have to be on your swivel. You will see kids commit when they haven't even taken a visit to the school. That tells you what, when those things are involved. With Samari, he'd been to campus twice since his offer. And I love where Texas sits with this kid. He'd be the number two or number three corner in the state of Texas in 2026.
I'd buy that. Yeah, and adding him to a class with Hayward Howard. And then, of course, Devon Benjamin out in California. That's another player that they continue.
Yeah, they're still in on Benjamin. That's going to be one. That's going to be a little bit more NIL sided, but that's fine. That's the reality we're in right now. I think it's almost kind of a dirty word when we say, or a negative connotation when we say, well, this is NIL. Well, it's just reality. This is where it is. We want to make sure the media understand. We want to make sure our fans understand this is kind of the floor of what we're trying to tell you about.
Samari, there's been a recruitment from 2025 that you've mentioned pretty often as looking pretty similar to Samari Matthews' recruitment here in 2026.
Yeah.
They're on the other side of the ball, but the more and more we get closer to his decision, the more and more I agree with you about who his recruitment kind of doppelganger looked like.
Yeah, it really did. His personality and everything surrounding it reminded me of Jamie French's recruitment last year. Every year you get a couple kids that you just get a good feeling about. They have a certain personality that kind of meshes with what Texas is building and what they're doing. And you can kind of feed off of what they're telling you. And you can write – the writing's on the wall. They may not always come out and say it. And sometimes they'll come out and say it to us privately. But they won't always come out and say it until it's time to announce. But, yeah, it reminds me a lot of the Jamie French recruitment. Let me tell you something. Texas was not in the Samari Matthews sweepstakes until he hit campus. Texas was not in the Jamie French one until he hit campus. That kid was a former Alabama commit. He was trending Ohio State. Florida obviously made that late run, but you know, Texas wasn't really in the mix. He gets on campus in April. That recruitment flipped on a dime. And that's kind of what we felt like. It's very similar to Samari. And so I think it's going to have a similar ending as well.
This is one that's going to be fun to track. We'll have a full coverage of this one as Texas tries to continue to build its defensive back class. Before we keep going, got to show some love to our other sponsor. Knock that out of the way. It is Andre the Lawyer.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
Go through a few questions that I see here. Going to hit this one real quickly from our guy. Williams, David. I'd hope Texas gets Samari Matthews for many reasons. Hey, you're our Carolinas correspondent, Williams, David, so we may have to talk to you. I think he's a bookend to Cade Phillips. However, my question is, do you think getting him will impact the recruitment of Josh Dobson? He continues, as good as John Meredith is, I think Dobson's better. I think Dobson's the best recruit in the entire 2027 class. Hey, man, I got a coin right here. You can flip one of them, and if you land on either side, you're getting an elite corner. Dobson out of South Carolina, Catawba Ridge, number 6 in the rankings. I think Meredith may end up being like number 3 in the rankings right now. Like, there are some high-quality corner recruits in this 2027 class. I'm partial to Meredith maybe a little bit because I've seen him in person. But, hey, if you're putting together a big board at corner and your options are Dobson and Meredith, that's high-quality stuff.
I'm glad that Williams David brought this because he has his own recruiting big board. It doesn't matter what we write at Inside Texas. It doesn't matter what any website that covers recruiting writes.
Because he studies it too.
Williams David does his own big board. He is looking at everything, track times, fat composition. You know, he's looking at everything. And I don't know as much about Dobson, but we are familiar with Meredith. We've seen him a couple times. I've seen him in person. Let me tell you something about John Meredith. That's a kid that could probably start his first year, or I mean, get immediate playing time. Okay. Like, he is 6'3". He is what that NFL prototype they are coveting right now. They want that kind of kid. And so, but here's the problem. The number one and number two corner in the country are not going to play on the same team. Not going to happen. You know why? Revenue sharing. You got salary caps. You got to factor in a lot of things. So you're not going to get both of those guys like in the past. It you could have potentially done that. And I think Texas would be really smart to stay close to home. I think they would be really smart to build that relationship that's about 2.5-3 hours from campus rather than a 2 or 3 hour flight to the East Coast. And so, yeah, I'm with you, Joe. You flip a coin. Either one of these guys are going to be tremendous. Charlie, you know better. You know better, okay? You know that you can't afford both unless you're circumventing the cap and you're doing all this illegal stuff that I'm sure the clearinghouse probably won't catch anyway. You can't do that. It's not going to happen. You've got to allocate. You know what will happen is the team that wants both, the only way they would do it is if they had zero cornerbacks in their room to retain. We got nobody left. They all left. There's nobody in that room. The door's been locked for 2 weeks. Then you could have a conversation about both. But if your cornerback room looks like that, you're not in position to land either one of these guys anyway, because you're not a top five program. These kids are going to go play somewhere at a very high level. Stay with John Meredith. Stay in state. Let me tell you, Williams David, John Meredith is the truth. That's a guy that Charlie and I identified probably earlier in the year, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, as a must-get, must-build relationship, must-focus on. Not only because we think so, because Texas thinks so.
One thing, I just looked this up real quick, is that of the 3 stars that South Carolina has, Lenora Sellers, Nick Harbor, Dylan Stewart, Stewart and Harbor are from Washington, D.C. originally, which is kind of no man's land for recruiting. Virginia Tech doesn't have a hold there. Penn State would like to have one, but it's, you know, everybody goes there. It's not really aligned with one place. Lenora Sellers was from South Carolina. They made sure he didn't get out of there. And part of me just at this juncture really early looks at Dobson, looks at him being from South Carolina and wonders like, I wonder if Clemson and South Carolina don't make sure that, you know, that's not someone that gets – make sure that that's someone who sticks within the Palmetto State.
But as good as he is, Georgia and Ohio State are going to be first up to the bat. I'm just telling you right now. And if Alabama can win this year, I think they'll assert themselves in that conversation as well.
Good one from Jay Soul. I want the linebacker, to be honest. We can lose all we want. If we lose a linebacker, we're done. They're not going to be done. I think this is in reference to Tyler Atkinson. We've talked a lot about Tyler Atkinson on this channel. Out of Grayson, extremely athletic, 5-star linebacker prospect. I think the number one linebacker prospect in the country. Losing on Braden Rouse was tough. You do have Kosi Akpala. If Johnny Nansen's able to go get someone like Tyler Atkinson, then dang, this class does look a lot different. And the narrative around Tyler Atkinson and Johnny Nansen also looks a lot different. And, you know, he released his top four yesterday. He's been tweeting a lot about all his finalists. And, you know,
he's playing the game. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's a recruit that's playing the game. And look, I respect it. You know, I got to meet his dad last year when I went and watched Tyler play at Grayson. And that's a good family. And that's a really good kid that, like, they understand their value. They understand their market and what they're kind of working with right now. I think Texas is in a sneaky position here. And I only say that because Texas understand, like, this is where Sark, I think, works really well. Yeah, he's not going to overspend for a lot of these prospects. But there's about four or five that he calls the upper echelon that they will overspend for. Like the Justice Terrys, the Jonah Williams. They are particular with who they spend for. Could they have broke the bank for Felix Ojo? Absolutely. They weren't going to. I don't think he wasn't viewed that in that high as a light as some of in a Nacho or a Jackson Cantwell. He's not going to overspend for that. But for a Tyler Atkinson, for a guy that they're going to potentially lose Anthony Hill after the 2025 season because he's probably going to go in the first or second round of the 2026 draft, that's a guy you want to replace because you've got a great room there with Leonardo Fouts, Anthony Smith, Elijah Bo Barnes. And now you said, you know, Kosi Okpala in the class. This is where they can kind of push everything to Atkinson. Losing out on Rouse really puts them in a great position because they weren't going to be able to get both. And I was sad about Rouse because that's the best high school linebacker tape I've seen in 2026. So I was definitely sad. We're not going to cover that kid. But that's the thing with Atkinson. Texas is sneaky in this recruitment, and it just would be funny if Sark went into Georgia and took the best player from the state again out of Kirby Smart's hands like he did the year before with Terry.
Best defensive player at that. So big
deal. Oh, yeah. The best defense. Yes.
Right there. We'll keep moving on. Why, from Pernell Johnson, why do they talk about the Horns being young and replacing a lot, but never questioned Alabama replacing every year? I think there's a little bit of some lack of faith in Sark nationally to this. And I think that also Sark has earned a significant amount of faith back. When you see the past 2 years, what he's done at Texas from 5-7, ignoring all the USC stuff, going from the coordinator at Alabama who put up great numbers with Tua and Mac Jones and Najee Harris and put a Heisman winner from the wide receiver position into the list of all-time greats with Devonta Smith. It just hasn't been done as much as Texas as it was done at Alabama under Saban. Just next up, next up, next up. I think also there's a perception that, yes, does Texas go to the portal? Sure. But we know this, Justin, like they go to the portal to fill needs or add best players available. They're not doing the Ole Miss route. And Ole Miss tries to recruit really hard from the high school ranks.
Yeah.
But they also are very active in going in the transfer portal and getting guys like Jackson Dart way back then, or like, Walter Nolan. I think is Fluff Bothwell on Ole Miss or Miss State? I can't remember, but he was one of the best.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was one of the best G5 running backs, and he's at one of the Mississippi schools, or maybe Auburn. I can't remember off the top of my head. But either way, you know, they get someone like, you know, they have Austin Simmons there, but then they're going to go and add, you know, impact wide receivers. Like, they talk about Texas being young because – when you are adding from the portal, you're usually adding known commodities. You're usually adding guys that people recognize. And in the Isaiah Bond edition kind of fits into this. Like, people knew who Isaiah Bond was from Gravedigger, from, you know, playing for Alabama in that season. Then he comes to Texas and they're like, oh, we know who that is. Oddly enough, I don't know, people watching this channel know exactly who Ryan Wingo is. But there may be some people around the country who look at Ryan Wingo and are like, whoa, who's that guy? Yeah, he had 400 yards last year, but he was not breathing or taking up the same oxygen that like Ryan Williams, Cam Coleman, Jeremiah Smith was. Well, there's someone who is kind of stepping into roles for Bond, for, you know, even some of the other guys they have or had last year. And they just don't know about him as much. When you're looking at the offensive line, you know, Alabama has started freshmen on the offensive line. Alabama started freshmen on the defensive line. Alabama started Caleb Downs as a freshman before he transferred to Ohio State. I think the overall answer to this question may be Saban did it for about 15, 16 years and starts kind of entering year three for it. And that's just how it is. There are some positions where they are kind of young, and some of that has to do with attrition in the 2022 class. There are a lot of those guys who did not make it to their third or fourth year, despite being highly ranked. There are some of those guys who've gone to the NFL. But I kind of think that as a national consciousness thing, you know, it's one of those things where Alabama did it for 10, 15 years, and Sark is starting to do it just right now. And Ryan Nelson brings up a good point. Like, Mosley and Endries are proven. I think so, too. They played Power 5 football last year. They were West Coast players in an East Coast conference on pretty poor teams. So maybe there's just a lack of perception, a lack of information for some of the national people who don't know that the offensive line is replacing four starters, but every candidate except for one is a third or fourth year player.
And three of them had previous starts.
And the other one was a five star. Maybe there's just an unknown about how, okay, Jahdae Barron and Andrew Mukuba are gone. Jelani McDonald played a lot of football last year. Jalen Gilbo's played a lot of football.
You know how hard it was to keep Jelani off the field at times?
Yeah. Like, I think while with the original question, why do they talk about it?
Yeah.
And this is, you know, kind of the local versus national push and pull that's always going to happen with college football. I just think it's a time frame thing that, you know, when you had Alabama doing it literally for 15 years, and then even with Kalen Boer coming in, going 9-3, losing to Vanderbilt, whatever, still having a great year. It's just part of the helmet does it. And the helmet hasn't done it as long in burnt orange, but it's starting that process.
You said it.
Keep on going.
Trill, I'm gonna tackle this. Hey, Trills Mac, I do love the vibes you're giving off. I really do. About prayers for everyone affected in the floods, we are all God's people. I like that. I like that you brought. Understand when you say perhaps Texas gets more money in NIL later this fall, Texas has the money. Just because you have it doesn't mean you spend it. Have you ever met anybody that's wealthy? Ask them that question. Ask them, hey, do you just spend your money just because you have it? No, wealthy people don't do that. Rich people do that.
We'll get to that because I want to bring up my NIL article.
Yeah, you need to bring that up because some people are very missing. They don't understand the dynamic. They see Texas losing three or four recruits in a 4 or 5 week window, and they think the sky is falling. Everything. They don't understand. There's smart money and there is dumbass money. And buddy, Texas will not fall into the dumbass category.
I'll pull that up. We got a few more great questions to go through. Jason Hernandez, I like this one. If NIL was in play 4 years ago, would Texas still have went into the SEC? Because it's about money to the players, not competition, so to speak. Clemson, Miami, Notre Dame are proven, so it doesn't matter. I'm trying to think of the timeline here. And remember, there were extremely quiet rumblings about Texas going to the SEC. I think it was in just about, you know, spring of 21. And it was not really laid bare for everyone until Brett Zwanerman at the Chronicle put that out there. That's when it blew up.
Yeah. We were hearing rumblings about a month or two before that.
At July, at SEC Media Days, when that blew up and Jimbo and Ross Bjork had the microphones put into their face about it and all that. NIL had been coming up. I think it was bubbling up at least 2 years before because – there were Texas conversations about NIL during the Tom Herman era.
Yes.
And I don't think that means they were.
It accentuated in 2020.
Like
the COVID year pushed it.
We knew it was coming starting July 1st or August 1st, 2021, at least a year prior.
And that 2020 year is what pushed it.
I'm not going to be naive enough to think that, like, the SEC conversations didn't start until 2021. But I also know that Texas probably looked at everything and thought, you know what? It will all probably still work. And you know what? Some things that are really tough to see is that Texas is an athletic department and not a football team. The football team definitely feeds the athletic department. It's like that all over the place. But when you're looking at maximizing revenue, I don't think people thought that there's this revenue sharing coming down at the time that decision was made. But like, I don't think there would be as much fervor.
Okay.
Yeah. There would not be as much like fervor for going to the SEC if they didn't think they could do the NIL thing properly. Cause they knew what the SEC was like.
Right. Right. I don't think they go together. I really don't. I think Texas was looking big picture when they looked at the SEC. They were looking at the landscape of all the post realignment, the playoff movement, all that kind of stuff. Those, they just so happen to kind of overlap each other. But yeah, 2020 is the reason NIL got pushed through as hard as it did. 2020 was going to be the year. If you had to get anything pushed through, that was going to be the year you're going to get it done. If you didn't get it done in 2020, you were going to have to wait another 100 years. And so that's, they only overlap in time, but I think they're completely two separate subjects, to be honest.
I think so, but it made going to the SEC sweeter and more attainable.
Like it made it sweeter to compete earlier. But what we didn't kind of foresee was that Texas was actually building out a pretty good program. Sark, coming from the SEC, knew what he kind of needed to look, what this team needed to kind of look like coming from Alabama. Then going into Bama and beating them the way they did, I think it galvanized everyone and to say, okay, this is the move we got to make. This is going to be the best move. And we've got to make sure we've got the right roster when that time comes. Sark had this program so prepared to go into the SEC, and it's polar opposite of what the rivals north of the Red River had.
It's because, if I can remember the timeline correctly, there was the portal first opened in the 2018 season. Because I remember when Casey Thompson and Cam Rising jumped in on the same day, everybody freaked out, and I kind of understand why. That was when there was a portal, and at that time, all the portal was just a list. You know, used to when a player transferred, he would just announce it, or it would get kind of – it was very not tender, but delicate how to report transfers. And then all of a sudden, boom.
Because reporters weren't supposed to have access to that database.
Well, no. I'm saying even before the portal.
Oh, okay.
A player.
Because I think a Brew McCoy.
Right. But a player transferring was like very delicate because that's a very, very personal decision that sometimes they were very hesitant to let get out. And sometimes you didn't know until you clicked on the roster and saw he wasn't there. Or you clicked on a roster and saw that he was at another team. What the portal did, the start of the portal, was it put every player who was transferring on a list that coaches had and that reporters could access. And so, you know, you might lose 4-ish players you knew per year. But you didn't know about the walk-ons. You didn't know about everybody in every other sport. And then it's like, oh, look at the volume of the portal. The portal goes all the way from Caleb Downs and Quinn Ewers to the D3 softball player. Literally everybody. And so the numbers were kind of panic-driven because it was, wow, we actually can see the data that we used to never be able to see. What changed is that one-time transfer exception. And that one-time transfer exception popped up at the same time NIL did. So you could go to the portal, go to another school, not have to sit for a year, and then kind of create an auction. So that is what really changed about the portal and NIL and going to the SEC. And I think a lot of that was just there's been a lot of reactionary stuff. It's still, I think, untenable because we see a lot of, tampering, things like that. But the timeline about NIL and the SEC, I think they were, like you said, Justin, two separate things that came together for Texas at a great time. Couple more, and then I want to get into that NIL article. Ryan Nelson, as the talent gap continues to shrink, great point, getting the right young men in your program is vital. You can't have cancers when the edges are so small and the dominant team era is over. You know what this looks like? The NFL, you know? You have to get everybody under the cap, but you can't have a crappy locker room or else things fall apart. And you know, the one prima donna, the one guy who is complaining about, you know, not getting what he thinks is his in a contract.
We call that the Terrell Owens.
Yeah, but Terrell Owens was good enough. I call it late stage Antonio Brown.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see where you're going with this.
Late stage Antonio Brown. Like, okay, he's really good. This is an all, he's crazy. You know, he runs off the field mid game. And that is a outlier among outliers. But to that point, Ryan Nelson, like, it is vital. And even if you have players who want to get paid what they believe is theirs, they have to fit. You know, I've always said, Justin, that it'd be naive to think that the very best players at the University of Texas are there solely because they love the burnt orange. The money had to be right for the best players. And that includes, you know, whoever you want to think of as like the best Longhorns, but they also have to fit. And we see, you know, I would venture that the All-Americans that Texas has right now are some of their best paid players, but they're also some of their best culture fits too.
And that's the combination that makes Texas a legitimate contender this year. You know, we saw it with Ohio State last year. You're going to have the most depth. You're going to have, and not so much a stacked roster, but you're going to have just depth across the board because you're going through essentially a 15, 16, 17 game season, I think, in some cases. And so it's funny how it all plays out, but I think that's what I love about covering Texas, because I know they really do have an ecosystem to kind of survive that. I couldn't say that in 2021. We can definitely say that in 2025. When your hardest workers are Arch Manning, Anthony Hill, Trevor Goosby, Colin Simmons, Michael Taft, when your best players are your hardest workers, coaches don't have to do a whole lot. They just don't. They roll the ball out. One of them says, spot the damn ball, and they play ball. They play football. And so that's Texas's. And I said this last night, too. I said they're almost lucky, because if NIL would have hit some of these particular players 2 years later, I don't know if they get all these guys. Outside of Colin Simmons, Texas got bargains on Anthony Hill Jr. as a freshman, on Trevor Goosby, on Arch Manning. They got bargains that other programs may not get. Now, yeah, they did have to spend pretty nicely for Colin Simmons. Well worth it. They spent a pretty good coin on Malik Muhammad, prototypical island man of the cornerbacks. But I think in some regards, you have to be strategic and have some foresight. Also think you need to be lucky. And I think that's kind of what Texas has right now. Their best players, their retention was the number one thing with Sark this year, because they had recruited so well and developed so well, and they knew that these guys were going to need a bump and a raise because their performance demanded it. And Texas supplemented it easily. They said, okay, you've earned this. Let's get this thing right for you guys. And so if you see Texas not go big bag on a high school freshman that hasn't contributed anything to college, understand a lot of that big bag has gone to make sure that these All-Americans are still good. They're still good to go. And again, when they're your hardest working players in the program, buddy, that's when you bring home hardware.
One of the things I will invite people to go and search, and I know we wrote about it. Anthony Hill and Colin Simmons were on the Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark. And Ryan Clark and his co-hosts, I can't remember them off the top of my head, you know, they played in late 90s, early 2000s college football. And they did not have basically a salary during their time as a player in college football.
They had a stipend.
Right, right. But it still wasn't anything near what what they have now. And Anthony Hill said something that I think is very, very prescient, very, very smart. He goes, you know what? Like, if I'm a college student and I get told, like, all right, 6 a.m. workout, and I will never ever lose sight of what college athletics is about with scholarships, with building rapport with the school. I know it's been diminished, but it's still there. But like Anthony Hill said something along the lines of, like, if I'm getting paid, 559, 6, 601, set those alarms. Let's go. Like, I'm ready to go. Like, there are some people who are mercenary, and this applies to pro sports too. I mean, you think the guys on the Colorado Rockies like what they're doing right now? No, but they're getting paid. But like, if you are getting paid to be part of a successful enterprise, that's another real additional motivator that championship players and elite players use in order to get up and do it and go on a week to week, day to day, game to game basis. So like,
absolutely,
there is a lot of nefariousness about it, but like, I think Anthony Hill, and I credit Hill and Colin for being honest about it, because, you know, money in college sports is always something that it's a little bit hush hush. Like Ryan Nelson brings up, it was the pay mama's rent era recruiting, and
it wasn't just the '90s, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Trans Ams and Dodge Challengers,
2000s.
But like, there is a real aspect about college sports now to where, yeah, you want to play for the Texas on your chest. You want to play for your last name. But like, if you're getting paid, that helps go through the workouts. That helps go through everything. And I think sometimes that's lost sight of, but you have to have the culture to maintain it. And we feel pretty good about how Texas has done that there. Last recruiting question. Justin, you wrote about this yesterday. So Manuel, go to Inside Texas. $1, if you're not already there, can get you access up until kickoff of the Ohio State game. Which running back are the Longhorns focusing right now? You had some insight on who Chad Scott is continuing to communicate with in a recruitment that's become a little bit more wide open.
It has. And so, you know, when Tashard Choice was the running back coach, there weren't many players he couldn't get on campus. Like, it's hard to remember an assistant over the last 10 or 20 years that had more success at that position just by building relationships and building them early and often. A lot of those guys that wind up on campus, from C.J. Baxter to Jarrett Gibson, Choice knew those guys when they were in eighth grade, ninth grade. And so he had a lot of previous guys in that area that were going to be elite that Texas could go in and get. When Chad Scott came in, he didn't have those same relationships. He was up in West Virginia. He had some of them. And the only one that he had that was substantial was Derek Cooper, the one guy Choice couldn't get on campus. Texas and Choice love Derek Cooper. It's hard not to. The kid's a running back that has a linebacker mentality, and so it's hard not to. But Derek Cooper of Hollywood, Florida. It doesn't matter. It's Hollywood, Florida.
It's where Dolph Ziggler's from.
Who's that?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Only about five people will get that.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Marvin Zingler for a minute.
No, that's Slime in the Ice Machine. I got references, man.
Yeah, I was that. I remember those news stations. Now they like Derek Cooper, and I tell you, I think Derek Cooper really likes Texas because he was supposed to announce on the 12th, which is I think Saturday, and he decided, nope, I'm not deciding. I've got to go see Texas. He told us that personally. I've got to go see Texas, and so Derek is in no hurry. And Chad Scott already got him on campus once. That unofficial was the foundation for this recruitment because they really wowed mom and dad. But I love how Cooper and his family stuck to their official visit schedule. They said, these other schools have been recruiting us longest. They've built these longer relationships. We owe it to them to give them that opportunity. And that's why they would never come off of an official visit weekend. The mom was adamant they weren't going to do that. Remember, they had talked about coming in for an official midweek, and Texas thought, we really don't want to do that. We would really rather have him in a different circumstance, in a different scenario. And that's going to happen in early fall in the season when he does hit the campus. And so Texas is pushing all their eggs into the Derek Cooper basket right now. I didn't think I would be saying that 2 years ago with the ridiculous amount of running back talent about 3 hours around my house. I thought Texas would stay in state, lock one of those guys down and be done. But things happen. Recruitments happen. Big bags get thrown. Kids jump on a train early and they're locked in. Give them, hey, that's their decision. That's what they want to do. But the fact that Scott could get Cooper on campus and then get him to stop his announcement and wait until he gets back on campus, I think shows you that Derek Cooper is numero uno, muy, muy importante on that big board right now.
We'll finish up with a little bit about NIL in this whole landscape. And I think the the two voices that you really need to follow on this topic, On3's Pete Nakos, Yahoo's Ross Dellinger. I think those are the two people who have tracked this story better than anybody. Both had some great articles over the course of the past couple of days. Nakos on 3, Dellinger over on Yahoo. And basically, Big 12 coaches, they don't know the rules. And SEC front offices, recruiting departments, coaching staffs, they don't really know the rules. So I tried to figure out, okay, what's going on? It's interesting. First things first, there is a lot of confusion. House is a person. House was a swimmer at Arizona State, joined in the lawsuit, I think, by Sedona Prince, who I think played women's basketball at Texas, sued the NCAA because basically they said, hey, if you're enacting NIL, well, I wasn't here in the NIL era. What the heck's going on? Why can't I get my money? Understandable. Why did the government get involved? That's a common thing I see asked. Well, the government got involved through the judiciary, Northern Circuit, whatever, of California, Northern District, and it was a lawsuit. This isn't, so far, Congress hasn't done anything. The executive hasn't done anything. I know there was reports of, you know, Nick Saban and Cody Campbell getting involved in an executive committee. Seems like Saban's bowing out of that. We'll see how much teeth any sort of executive action has. Not to get too political, college football is probably not on the forefront of the White House's mind right now.
And it doesn't need to be.
Right. And so I know there are reports about a potential bill being introduced in the House or the Senate. I think the SCORE Act. Either way, House versus NCAA, when you're talking about House, refers to a person, refers to this court case. Why did it happen? Well, there's a $2.8 billion back damages settlement that the power conferences, Division I, NCAA, I think Notre Dame gets their own vote, they agreed to. And if they had not agreed to it, then they would have gone to court. They would have gotten slapped around in the courts like they always do. And then they would have owed $20 billion. So $20 billion. So they're only paying a little bit over 10% of that settlement instead of what they probably would have done had they gotten slapped around. The settlement creates provisions for fully funded scholarships for every sport. So there's no more 11.7 for baseball. There's no, and our guy David McClellan can help us out if he's watching. I think it was about like 12 or 13, 13.0 for an entire swimming and diving roster. So you think about all the Olympians and All-Americans Texas has produced, most of those swimmers are not on full scholarship. And there's some interesting decisions Texas made as far as diving too. So now those are all fully funded. And what it did was it created provisions to where, okay, we're going to have revenue sharing. That revenue sharing for this 2025 season, 2025, 2026, it can go up. It's a cap of $20 million, $20.5 million. And it's, I've seen questions where it's like, well, why don't schools want to go over that? Schools don't even want to pay this.
No. Like,
Texas brings in, or brought in, I think during the most recent year, $331 million of revenue. Now they have to give up 6% of it. Texas is one of, Texas stands alone. I think Texas A&M and Ohio State are all unique in that they are just giants when it comes to revenue. There are a ton of Power Five schools who don't even bring in $120 million. So if your revenue is $120 million and you have to give up a sixth of it, it's a huge line item. So you're not going to see schools go over that $25 million cap. Most schools are dedicating 75% to football. The SEC is requiring that $2 million go to this thing called Alston payments. Don't worry about that. It's kind of like cost of living adjustment. So schools have eight schools, like the athletic department has $18.5 million to spread around its student athletes. SEC schools, for the most part, given about 75% to football. That's about $13.8 million, something like that. And you'll see here, there are a lot of reports last year, and I think even Ross Bjork, the Ohio State athletic director, admitted it, that the Ohio State collective raised around $20 million for their football roster last year. So let's do some math. If a national championship roster that includes guys like Caleb Downs, includes guys like Trevion Henderson, includes guys like Quinshon Judkins and Will Howard, they needed $20 million, and your revenue sharing portion is just about $14 million. There's some numbers you got to make up. So where does that come from? And then this is where all the confusion comes from. No one knows what's really going on. You have this thing called their collective still exists. I wrote an article that Texas One Fund sticking around. Their main mission of paying players is still the same. The money from donor to Texas One Fund to player has to go through a different process. It's still the same. The major confusion is how much of that money can they really get? And especially when every NIL deal that's above $600, Justin, has to go through a clearinghouse and no one really knows what the answers are for it.
And they've already rejected a reported 80 plus of these NIL deals already. And I don't think that's substantial. What I think is substantial is if you do have an NIL deal that gets flagged and gets rejected, you get one time to resubmit it. So that means if you can't get it fixed in that one resubmission, you have lost out on all the time, energy, and resources you have put into that prospect, and you got to turn quickly and go to the next guy. And so this is why I think these recruiting departments, they need contract-savvy people in this ecosystem to understand and maneuver this stuff. August 1st, you said it best. August 1st could change a lot of this in the fact that if the numbers, per se, aren't there with some of these prospects, and I'm promising you some of the numbers are not going to be there for these. We've seen some of the numbers not be there before all this stuff when you see late commitments. But you made a good point about August 1st. That could be a date where these things can become official, or they can at least sign something. And if the money's not there, they're going to ask questions.
Right.
They're going to wonder what's going on. Then you might have a slew of decommitments. And it may change how things progress into November and December and into flip season. Flip season may come earlier.
Right. And so this is from an NCAA document sent to institutions who opted into the house settlement. Not everybody has. The service academies are on their own thing. There's a lot of different things going on. When is the earliest an institution may provide a written offer regarding NIL or other additional benefits to payments to a high school, prep school, or junior college athlete? An institution may provide a written NIL offer, and I think that includes revenue sharing, but I'm going to say it also includes non-institutional NIL, so collectives, the car dealership, the law firm, the oil and gas company, until August 1st. So how are all these people offering this? It's a great question. It seems like it's against the rules. That's where the NIL Go thing comes in, and we look down here where Deloitte, who's overseeing this, comes and checks on it. No one knows what the enforcement mechanism looks like. No one knows what happens when, if you can see, and I'll open this one up in a new tab. If you go through these deals, you have three options for any deal above $600. You have cleared, not cleared, or flagged for additional review. So if you have this NIL deal, that's for, okay, $100,000, from a collective, and Deloitte says, like, that's not fair market value. Well, they've already agreed to them, haven't they? But they weren't supposed to agree to them, but they've already agreed to them. So you're not clearing it. Well, what's the enforcement? That's a huge question.
Yes.
And I think there are some schools that are saying, like, whatever, screw it, we'll figure it out later. And
that's exactly what some schools are doing.
And I don't think that's reckless, but I think it's risky.
Whereas, it's really risky.
Whereas I think there are some schools that are saying, like, we would rather, if we have three swings at the bat, we would rather know that all three swings are going to be allowed, as opposed to like swinging, hit a home run, rounding the bases, getting in the dugout, and then like the official score being like, hold on a second, that didn't work right. That seems to be my read on how Texas and some other schools are doing it. I think as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, like there's already a ton of money from collectives from the school tied up into retention. So that's limiting it. I've always mentioned that there's always going to be a practical limit on NIL. Like, yes, okay, sure, there are Cody Campbells. But even at schools like Texas, like, there is donor fatigue. There is, even from people who have hundreds of millions of dollars to their name, like, the only return on investment is emotional. And so, like, I think that there are a lot of schools, and Ojo has been the one that comes in everybody's focus. And I think Boobie Feaster did as well, just because they're the big ones and the agents put out the stats and stuff like that. But I don't think that there is a lot of clarity on post July 1st deals, agreements, anything like that, on whether it'll work or not. And they can't get that offer until August 1st. Justin, you mentioned August 1st being a day that is going to be big on the recruiting calendar. They can't sign them until signing day. And so signing day is going to be a chaotic day as well.
Yeah. I think you nailed it. You've surmised this. This is a must-read article at InsideTexas.com. Joe went through this thoroughly yesterday. You got to come to InsideTexas.com and kind of check it out, because, look, we're all learning this on the go. And it's not just the college departments. It's the writers. It's the media, because there's a lot of lingo in here that's got to be deciphered. That's what makes it fascinating. You may see Texas take it on the chin to a recruit a couple days ago. You may see Texas get a commitment today. But understand, in the back, there is a ton of movement on how to make sure they get these rosters correct and how they line up everybody correctly. And there's just – that's what makes it fascinating to me. There's going to be things that happen over the next 6 months we didn't anticipate. There's going to be stuff that these other schools, they're going to either get caught doing, or they're going to get by doing it, or they're going to circumvent it, and they're going to figure out the way to do it. I mean, that's just human nature. But – overall, like, you really do have to it's one of those things where we're learning on the go, just as fans are learning on the go. But this article is about as must read as you can get when it comes to recruiting. And I strongly suggest you check that out, because it's there's a lot to unpack here, much more than in the time we're allotted on this video. We love that you're here to question about us and ask us about it. And we're doing the very best we can to kind of to explain it all out. But even colleges are struggling with some of this in some regards. And I think you're going to see more hires with lawyers, with contract guys that are going to be working in NIL departments. They're going to be working in recruiting departments, because we are going to a professional model. And now when you have that, you've got to have your cap guys. And your cap guys, every NFL guy has them. They are some of the most valuable people in those franchises. And I think the bigger schools, you want to get out in front, they're already hiring those guys.
So I'm going to I'll actually do this real quick. I'm going to pin the article to my Twitter profile real quick so you can go read it. But Ross Dellinger got Kenny Dillingham, Arizona State head coach, on the record saying this: "We don't know the rules. A settlement passed. Who knows what Deloitte is going to clear? Until there's clarity, you're living in limbo. You're seeing a lot of people lie and promise fake things." And Pete Nakos mentioned that. A lot of stuff, we're even skipping over a good amount of stuff that relates to deals with high school players, various state laws. Again, I mentioned, I think there's supposed to be a bill introduced, maybe even passed committee in the House, like to the House floor, the House of Representatives floor, about NIL. And schools want federal legislation, not executive
action. They want rules.
They want federal legislation
and guidelines,
because they want one set of rules instead of 50.
Exactly.
The big thing is, there are 50 set of rules, and then in some cases, it doesn't even seem like there's a set of rules that allows for stuff for recruiting staffers saying top prospects are making anywhere from $20,000 to $25,000 monthly.
That is accurate.
And, you know, that's, I wrote this yesterday. There's so many layers to the story. Hopefully it explains where the sport's at on July 9th. Who knows what July 10th will bring? We don't know. But I think there's going to be legal challenges to Deloitte. There's going to be practical challenges to Deloitte. August 1st is going to be a big day, and we'll figure that out. And one question before we get out of here. I'm trying to find it. I think it was from Ryan Nelson. So Nevada and Texas has the same cap. Yes. FBS schools who opt
in. I thought he meant baseball cap. And I was like, why would Nevada have a burnt orange tee on their hat?
No, they
got. I hear cap, I think baseball cap. That's my fault.
So every athletic department who opts into this has the same $20.5 million revenue sharing cap that comes from the school. I'll do a quick Google and I'll see what, I'm just Googling USA Today revenue. They have a great database. This was published on March 14th, 2024. So it's a little bit old, but Nevada, their revenue from, I guess it'd be 2022, 2023. It's probably gone up a little bit. Nevada's revenue was $47 million, $48 million. So they can share up to $20.5 million.
They're not going to go up to that.
There is no way.
You're cutting your nose to spite your face.
They can't do it. Some conferences have established floors of spending.
A lot of these schools don't make enough money to stay out of the red, much less share some of it. They want to share some of the debt. That's going to be the day when the players don't perform. And it's like, you know what? We need some cash back because you put us in debt. And then you got some more lawsuits.
And then obviously the basketball aspect, when you look at Big East schools like St. John's and you know, even UConn, who has a football program, they're going to spend more on their basketball program. And one last thing, Mississippi State is a national title contender in baseball way more often than it's a title contender in football. They may change their percentages too. So there's so much going on. But go to Inside
Texas. Their own.
Exactly. But go to Inside Texas. We're going to have recruiting covered. We're going to have media days covered next week. We're going to have everything covered. So make sure you join. $1 gets you access up to kickoff on August 30th. Great way to keep up with all the recruitments. We got, I think, 4 or 5 to track this week. A couple where Texas is in a great position. Of course, you have not yet. By Thinking Texas Football, our guy, Paul Wadlington. If you go by Phil Steele, I understand. If you go by Athlon, I understand. But if you want the most in-depth preview for Texas Longhorns football and the SEC and college football in general, that's where you need to go. So, Justin, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time on IT Live, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.